We're wrapping up the month of June. The South Carolina primaries are over, and there are seismic shifts taking place in the State House, specifically in the Senate. And just last night, the first presidential debate of the 2024 cycle took place. We break down what we saw and how concerning it really is today on the Talmadge Family Matters Show. Welcome in. It is the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. This one's the Palmetto Family Matters Show. It is Friday, June the 28th in the year of our Lord, 2024.
Ding.
Love it. Justin Hall, Mitch Prosser, Dr. Steve Pettit joining us from the wilds, actually, is zooming in to the program today. We're all happy to be here.
Dr. Pettit, is that Brevard, North Carolina?
Well, to be actually specific, it's the suburbs of Rosman.
The suburbs of Rosman.
Of course. How'd you not know that?
Yes. Okay. Yes. So it's and when it's called the wilds, that is appropriate because it is in the wild.
That's
one question though. Have you been to the Fourth Fall this week?
No, I have not. I have done double duty. I've been speaking to the teenagers each night and each morning. We have about 1,000 people there. And at the same time, I have two grandsons who both had a birthday this week. One of them turned 8 on Tuesday, and the second one turned 9 on Wednesday. They're Irish twins. And so I've been a camp counselor all week to junior age grandsons. So
to say your hands are full is an understatement, I'd imagine.
I've been stretched.
Yeah, fair enough. What causes more heartburn, being in the room last night of the debate or having to be camp counselor on top of speaking? We'll get to the debate in a second. We're a little bit removed from the June primaries. As you all know, you're watching our show. You understand what we talk about here on the program. The June 11th primaries took place, and a lot of those races went to runoffs. And what ends up happening in primaries, Mitch, is a lot of people like to, for lack of a better word, dance on graves. And that's not what we're here to do.
Absolutely not.
But what we do know has happened, specifically in the South Carolina Senate. We can get to the House a little bit later. Specifically in the South Carolina Senate, we will see a completely new Senate in 2025, because there are significant faces that will not be in that chamber come January.
Correct. Some of those are by choice. They've chosen to retire. I think of Senator Setzler, the longest serving senator in state history.
And in the country right now.
Senator Loftus, Senator Talley, some others who chose. Senator Mia McLeod. Senator McElveen, my senator. So there are many people that chose not to be there. Others not by choice. But the choice of the people, and some of those, to say it's a seismic shift, I think if you look at the entire landscape, the answer is yes. When you've got over 10%, probably closer to 20% of your 46 senators not returning by their choice or the choice of the people, that's significant. And that sets up a whole new landscape for how Schoolhouse Rock, how bill becomes a law. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, politics is not party, it's people. Mm-hmm. And policy is the same. It's not necessarily even the language in the bill at times, which is extremely important. Above all, it's the vehicle of how you get there and the people that help you get it there.
Right. And Dr. Pettit, we've kind of been talking about this. We talked about this as a staff just a couple of days ago, what we're seeing. Specifically, the biggest topic of conversation has been that three of the quote-unquote sister senators are not returning based on the votes of the people. We will not get into what has been said since those campaigns started or what happened in the aftermath of those election results. That's not for us to discuss. What is, I think, important for us to discuss is the fact that it appears that the people in Lexington County, Kershaw County, and Charleston County voted, not primarily, but to a large degree, on the issue of life. And so in those three examples, it appears that the voters said, no, we want someone who is more aligned with our pro-life positions. As we move forward, heading into the Senate session and the House session in 2025, are we to feel more buoyed by what it appears to be a more vocal pro-life voice amongst not only pro-life organizations like ours, but voters in three very distinct and very different sections of the state.
I think those are tremendous statements you've said, Justin, at this point. And I think, you know, the mission of Palmetto Family Council is to speak biblical values into South Carolina. And we've said that the power of influence in the state house should be in the church house.
Right.
This is the American system. This is the American way. And the influencing of voters through biblical teaching in the local church is going to transfer into decisions that are made both in lifestyle and also thank the Lord for our government system and the way it's set up. And people can be voted in or people can be voted out based on what the constituency, what the people in the county say. So the county has spoken. And so I think we should take it as it is. That's the system, this way is set up.
And to that point, I think it's also important. I think back, Mitch, I thought of you for whatever reason, because this isn't your favorite president. But I thought about a quote from a former president when he said, listen, the buck stops here.
Yeah.
Ultimately, when it comes to running for political office, you are always at the will of the people. Sure, voter turnout in primaries is significantly smaller than generals. That's always the case. Should it be? No. I think you should always vote. However, when it comes to primaries, and then when it comes to runoffs in primaries, anything can happen. And typically, those don't favor incumbents at all.
So one of the things that we've talked about, and for all of you out there listening who did vote, I'm not going to beat you up. I'm not going to preach to the choir as it is. But we have got to do a better job of encouraging our friends to get out and vote biblical values. As Dr. Pettit just said, the church house and people of courage, conviction, and faith are the ones that have the true influence on the state house. And if we're not at the table, if we don't show up and do our civic duty to vote, we will be on the table. We will be lunch if we're not eating lunch. There is no free lunch, which means we have to show up and get involved. We've got to get our churches involved by teaching and preaching biblical values, encouraging people to do their civic duty, even when they think it's inconsequential. You know, I've heard so many Christians, Justin, Dr. Pettit, I've heard so many Christians say, well, my vote really doesn't matter. In some of these cases, a congressional seat here in the state of South Carolina came down to less than 2,000 or right at 2,000 votes. A South Carolina Senate seat on Tuesday night came down to less than 100 votes. Your vote matters, and you have got to show up. You must be present to win. You have got to show up and vote biblical values. Dr. Pettit, your words couldn't have been truer.
Well, I'm glad that our system is the way that it is. And you're right, Mitch. We have to get to, I told people, you need to go vote. You need to go vote and vote what you believe. Otherwise, you have no right to complain.
And vote early. And I think what we're seeing, we'll get to the presidential campaign in a second. But I do think it's interesting that more people are starting to understand that early voting isn't necessarily a bad thing.
No.
And if as long as it's legal and well protected and a good system, it works. And people at a recent rally for the former president were chanting USA, and he said, "Stop chanting and go vote."
Yeah.
Stop chanting and go vote. Once you vote, then we can chant. So there seems to be a flow there, and you have more opportunities to vote now. You don't get an award for voting on Election Day. You can vote for a couple of weeks up until Election Day and primaries and certainly in the general. And I think what we see is 13.5% of voters voted in the June 11th primaries. That's 13.5% of those registered to vote,
which is about 60% of those in the state.
And so then take half of that, a little bit more, 51-52%. Half of those chose the candidate who won.
Mm-hmm.
So roughly 7% of the electorate in South Carolina basically selected the leaders for the next session. That's remarkable to me and shows that there is intrinsic power to the people in our system of government. In South Carolina, we had a couple of runoff races this past Tuesday. The 3rd Congressional District won by Sherry Biggs there. State Senate Districts 22, 23, and 26.
And 35.
And 35. And House District 93. Senate District 22 is former Senator Mia McLeod's seat.
Yes.
Representative Ivory Thigpen was running for that seat, but lost
to Overture Walker.
Yes. In District 23, we know Carlisle Kennedy defeated Katrina Sheely in that runoff. In 26, my Senate district, that was a Republican primary. Jason Geary defeated Chris Smith there. And then
Mike Jones over Lindsay Agostini in District 35 for the Republican primary.
And then House District 93.
Yes.
Also had their runoff, and
Sarita Edgerton
gets that one. So a lot happens. And as we move forward, the three of us, along with our entire staff here at Palmetto Family, we're going to be analyzing these. We're going to be talking. Listen, we're going to be talking to every single sitting member of the House and the Senate. That's what we do. We minister to them.
Yep.
We figure out what they need, and we try to meet those needs in any way possible, and just to communicate with them. So we're going to talk to all these folks. And as we get closer to January, I think you're going to begin to see, as we move into January, the effects that good biblical conversation can have with different members of the House and the Senate. Now, in the remaining time that we have.
Dr. Pettit, what did you think of the debate last night?
What did I think? Well, first of all, I came back from the service, and I had two grandsons I had to take care of. They did not seem to be overly interested in the debate.
No kidding.
So I threw them in the bathtub, and I got in about 10 or 15 minutes into it. In one way, what took place last night was expected. In some ways, it wasn't. We didn't know what was going to happen. It was not a debate that I enjoyed. Let me put it that way. It was not a debate.
That's good. Yeah.
And it shows you a little bit of where we are in our country right now, as far as at that level. And I think it's very clear that we need to have a change in the presidency.
I watched the whole thing, and I'm a nerd, so I was giddy, but with about 20 minutes to go before it started, because I had questions that I wanted to see. I wanted to see how the former president would respond in his first debate since 2020 with President Biden. I want to see how President Biden would do. Would this be State of the Union President Biden that seemed energized, or would it be the same now President Biden from those debates in 2020 where he was able to kind of tap Trump down a little bit and appear to be more of the adult in the room. Instead, what we got, I don't believe it was necessarily a great night for the former president. It was in comparison to the sitting president. My household grew more sad as the night went on because I felt sorry for the president of the United States. There's something to be said when the entire administration has been telling us for weeks that nothing is wrong. Don't believe your own eyes. We are not the droids you're looking for. And yet, last night, we couldn't escape it. Last night, we had a debate with no studio audience, with time limits, muted mics, commercial breaks, everything that had been agreed to by both campaigns, including pushed by the president's campaign.
Mm-hmm.
It hurt him.
Yeah.
There's no one in the room.
Yeah.
No one could react to anything. And so you're left with a president who frequently lost his train of thought, who looked lost, confused the topics on multiple occasions.
And that can happen with anyone in any state of mind, once or twice. I mean, my mind goes back, was it the 2012 debate with Rick Perry, who was
08.
Vigor, and he says, I got three things, and he says two, and, it happens. You know, you, Mr. Quayle, are no John F. Kennedy.
You go blank.
There are those spots in debates that it's sad. It truly is sad. As I told someone earlier, President Biden deserves to be sitting on the back porch, sipping a glass of tea, talking about stuff with his grandkids. I don't know that he's, I don't know. I won't make any definitive statement here. I don't know that he's in a place to be leading the country and the American people.
Dr. Pettit, you mentioned you're at this camp. You're not only speaking and engaged in the camp, but you also have your grandchildren there. You're a grandfather and you're a father, and we are too. When you see someone in the position that President Biden is in, and President Biden has been in public service since 1972 is when he was elected to the Senate.
Wow.
He's been around for a while. So he's got a lot, he's got a wealth of knowledge in how the system works. But when someone is in that position of authority, and we are to pray for those in authority,
absolutely,
there's no question, we should continue to do so. But you have someone in a position of authority, an important a position as President of the United States, who, as we always say, has the hand on the red button.
Leader of the free world.
Leader of the free world. How concerning is it from a Christian perspective that it appears the leadership we have, we might not say is even weak politically, that can be on a, but is actually weak just in normal interaction? How should a Christian react to what they saw last night?
I think first of all that the office, I think the biblical teaching, and particularly Romans 13, is to pray for those that are in authority, and that there should be respect and appropriate reverence or fear for those. And so this is our country. This is our leadership put on display. And so on one hand, I think there should be a sense of a recognition of the stateliness of the position and the respect that whoever the president is deserves. And I think we should not speak ill of leaders. I think that's inappropriate for us as Christians. But I think our own emotions were I think saddened by the situation, but also it is putting us in a very unstable position. This is not stable.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the country feels unstable as it is. I think if you're just living your normal life, as my own children are, who are raising grandchildren, the prices that they're having to pay today are not the prices they were paying a year or 2 years ago.
Right.
Where we're going to be in the world today situation with the apparent lack of strength and leadership, leaders have to lead. And if you're not going to lead, then you have to change leadership. It doesn't take away from the fact that it might be a good person, but leaders have to lead. And if they don't lead, then you have to have people lead for the good of the whole. So that's the way I see it. That's the way I felt last night in the entire situation.
And you know, we talk about, you know, as political nerds, we talk about winners and losers. Who were the winners? Who were the losers? You know, it's hard for me to put my finger on exactly who the winners were last night. I think there are very few people that won.
Jake Tapper and Dana Bash.
Who did an outstanding job being, as the refs are supposed to be on the football field, non-existent. Your goal is to not exist, to call balls and strikes, to whatever. Balls and strikes don't exist on a football field.
Correct.
I do know my basketball reference.
I know, you throw a strike with a ball.
Okay. I think the biggest losers, you know, we could talk about the American people being the biggest losers and the lack of civility, the lack of statesmanship.
Sure.
I want to draw that down a little more specifically to what we've seen as the rhetoric from both campaigns and the rhetoric over time from the sitting president. And that is babies. If you are part of the pro-life community, if you consider yourself pro-life, which many of you, if not all of you watching this podcast right now, consider yourself, I felt mildly discouraged by the answers given on abortion last night. Mm-hmm. In wake of the 2-year anniversary of Roe, the question of whether or not the U.S. government, the federal government should make decisions on behalf of innocent preborn children, whether that should be left to the states. And to me, the questions were pretty clear and the answers were enigmatic at best and obfuscation at worst. It was like, we're not even going to answer the question. And to the constant drumbeat of former President Trump, that it's a state's issue, yes and no. Yes, it's a state's issue as the overturning of Roe returns that back to the states. But if we are going to call ourselves a nation that preserves, protects, and defends the first unalienable right, and that is life, if we're going to call ourselves a nation that does that, and we allow the activity of what happens in states like California, Massachusetts, and other New York to happen from a federal point of view, I think there has, we would not allow, and I'm taking a little liberty here, we would not allow states like North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia to hold slaves if it was against the law federally. We wouldn't allow it. We should not allow states to do something that's against the conscience of our nation, against the first unalienable right, without which no other rights exist. Life. You can't have liberty, you can't have property or the pursuit of happiness if you don't have life. And so I think children in the womb, the 64, 68 million babies since 1973 that have been aborted after the Roe decision, they're a testament, a memorial that life deserves protecting, defending. Those little grandsons with you, my three at home, your one baby girl, she deserves protecting. But just as much, the children that are going to be born, whether you look at it from a faith perspective, an economic perspective, whatever, they deserve protection. They deserve defending. And we have to be a voice for the voiceless.
Well, what's interesting is, go ahead, Dr. Pettit.
No, I'm just saying, absolutely. And I think our voice needs to be as loud as possible, even into the conscience in either party, Democrat or Republican. And I think our people need to vote and come out and vote and stand for what is right. Because if they're not going to stand, we just can't sit there and do nothing. We have to say what needs to be said.
Absolutely. And by the way, I think if I could fact check former President Trump here, the issue did get returned to the states. But Justice Alito's majority opinion did state that the citizens of each state elect their state representation and their congressional representation. So it's not as if the Dobbs decision said, okay, no federal legislation ever can be enacted, because it's going to be enacted on one side. And I don't know, be sober-minded as you think through these things. One big thing coming out of the debate last night, and we'll close with this, there is now, and I think I might have said it on the show months ago several times, and I know we've talked, I've always said that I don't believe that the current president will be the nominee come the convention. The Democratic National Convention is in August. The Republican one's in July. We're supposed to have another debate in September. If we have another debate in September, I don't know if the Democratic nominee is the guy that was on the stage last night. Kay Bedingfield, former White House communications staffer, last night said this, quote, "It was a really disappointing debate performance from Joe Biden. I don't think there's any way to slice it. His biggest issue was to prove to the American people that he had the energy, the stamina, and he didn't do that." MSNBC, Nicole Wallace, was talking about how they can actually remove him at the convention and do it legally and the way that makes sense on MSNBC this morning. Joe Scarborough on Morning Joe was doing the same thing. We are about to embark for the next 2 to 3 weeks, serious political upheaval within a specific political party and possibly within the administration. There are calls. Chip Roy has already said he's putting forward a resolution asking the vice president to invoke the 25th Amendment. Now,
and that's not her job, is it?
That's actually, she would convene the call. The call would be to, she can, as the vice president, she would convene the cabinet.
Okay.
And say, what do we do here?
Okay.
So the next 2 weeks are tenuous.
We're watching history being made.
Because I think we need to, as Christians, we need to be sober-minded and understanding that we are moving into, we're already in uncharted territory. We are moving further into uncharted territory here. And I've said it for weeks, I've said it for months, maybe even years now. We are my generation certainly, but we are a people longing for truth and reality. Well, we got reality last night. Everyone got a hard dose of reality. Now it's how people respond to that reality. And I think you're going to see that in multiple different ways. Mitch, final thoughts on either the elections here in South Carolina or the debate last night?
my final thought is twofold. First of all, when it comes to practical matters here on this earth and how we effectuate our Christianity, and I simply boil it down to three words: better quality candidates, better caliber candidates, however you want to say that. Do not settle for the lesser of two evils. And yes, that's often what we're left with, but we have got to do a better job of training up the next generation and those who have a proclivity to enter into the public sphere and be public servants. We have to do a better job as believers, as people of courage, conviction, and faith. The church has to inform the government. The second thing is this, and I think it's not poetic. It's very real. If your hope was on CNN last night, if your hope is sitting in a Senate chamber in the South Carolina State House or in the House chamber or in the governor's chair, if that's your hope, you of all people will be most hopeless. Our hope is not there. Our hope is in heaven. Our hope is in the gospel and the effectuation of the gospel here on earth. And we've got to do our part to share the good news, the gospel of peace, because this is the only peace that will ever live in our hearts. If you watched that debate last night and thought, I'll get peace after this.
You go to bed.
That ain't happening. Yeah, you go to bed. You should have gone to bed early. Get take a bath and go to bed. Doc, I know you can speak far more powerfully and succinctly to the idea of our hope not being on that stage last night.
Well, I think, you know, we are to pray for kings and all in authority that we would lead a quiet and peaceable life. And I think we should pray for the decisions to be made that will bring stability and strength. The purpose of government is to protect its people. And that takes strong leadership. Everything rises and falls on leadership. This is a classic example. Leadership makes a difference. We need to pray that God will give us a president who will be strong and stable and make good, wise decisions that strengthen our country. And so I think it's pretty clear what we should be praying for right now. And I think for the South Carolinians, we need to make sure that we are doing our part in voting and praying for God to work in these situations.
Absolutely. Leadership matters. We don't have updated polls from after the debate, but we can tell you that I look at battleground states. Trump is plus 5 in Arizona, plus 4 in Georgia, plus 0.5 in Michigan, plus 2 in Nevada, plus 6 in North Carolina, and plus 2 in Pennsylvania. President Biden is in North Carolina today. He'll be speaking there
at noon,
momentarily, actually. And we will, of course, be keeping our eyes on that and keeping our eyes on a bunch of other things. The Supreme Court has just put down a bunch of decisions today. Yeah. Breaking news that Chevron is gone. We'll be analyzing that court opinion over the weekend and the early part of next week. Mitch knows what my next step is to do. I'll be printing and annotating for the next 4 to 5 days. Thank you so much for joining us either on our podcast feed or on Facebook or YouTube. If you want to learn more about Palmetto Family, palmettofamily.org is where you can go to get all episodes of the show, all of our writings, our research, everything that we have for you is there on the website. And if you want to learn more about the staff, you can do that under our about page as well. And if you would like to invest in the work that we're doing, if you believe in the work that Palmetto Family is doing to become and be the biblical voice for South Carolina, you can invest in the work that we're doing, palmettofamily.org/invest. And if you're listening on podcast, make sure to give us a 5-star rating and review. Share it with your friends and family. If you're watching on Facebook or YouTube, there's no charge to do this. Hit the subscribe button. It's free. That's all you got to do is just do that. For Dr. Steve Pettit, who is in the wild of North Carolina, which I'm sure is a lot cooler than it is here, just because, you know, it's the mountain area. For Mitch Prosser, I'm Justin Hall. Thank you so much for watching and listening to the fastest growing and strongest conservative talk show in the state of South Carolina. Yes, Mitch, it's this one. It's the Palmetto Family Matters Show.